Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. We're going to be doing a series over the next several weeks. I've invited a few guys on that know a thing or two about elk hunting, and I'm going to be throwing them very similar scenarios that you may encounter or that most guys who've done any kind of elk hunting have encountered on their hunts, and see how they would handle it. And even though a lot of the questions will be the same, a lot of scenarios will be the same, it's very interesting to listen to the different approaches from these guys that seem to get it done year in and year out. So I think it's a really neat perspective and a cool way to learn. That way, when you're presented with those scenarios or those situations out in the field, you'll be able to apply it. I also want to urge you guys to take the time and please go on iTunes or the Podbean app. Give us a review. It's super important for us. Helps the ratings, helps keep us ahead of everything. It helps us keep this podcast free, to be honest with you. So if you get out there and do that for me, I'd appreciate it. And please go check out Phoenix Shooting Bags. They're our number one sponsor, and they put out an awesome product, and we appreciate them. And I'd appreciate it if you could go check them out. Let's roll into this next episode.
Hi, welcome to Days in the Wild, Big Game Hunting Podcast, brought to you by Phoenix Shooting Bags. Today, we're talking with my buddy, Corey Jacobson. And if you know who he is, you know we're going to talk about elk. So we're doing a series right now called the What Would You Do series. And Corey's one of my guests for this. And we're gonna throw him some common elk hunting scenarios. And we're either going to listen to a story that where he's dealt with that scenario before, or how you think he would approach it, and kind of pick his brain, go from there. Well, how's it going, man?
Doing really good. I appreciate you having me on, and I'm as always super excited to talk about elk hunting and elk hunting strategies. So this is super exciting.
Yeah, awesome. I every year it's so crazy. I don't know why. It's the first thing I start. I mean, because I'm a generalist. I hunt everything. But for as soon as spring ends, or like the spring, I mean, for me, it ends in Arizona. It feels like it ends a lot earlier, even though technically it's still spring. But when May comes around, to me, it's summertime because it's 107 degrees today. But I always start thinking about elk around this time. And I don't know if it's because the draws and this and that, but even though the elk season for me comes after deer season, I have deer hunts before elk. I don't even start thinking about those deer hunts until like right before the deer hunt. I think about elk first. I don't know. It's just a weird thing. I don't know. I don't know what it is, but.
And if you're an elk addict like I am, you really never quit thinking about them. You know, I like to hunt other species as well. And, you know, in fact, we went bear hunting last week and had my boys with me. And, you know, the fortunate thing about Idaho is right now, you know, there's bear season, there's wolf season, there's turkey season, there's a lot of seasons open.
Right.
And the second I found an elk shed, that bear hunt went from bear hunting to elk shed hunting all of a sudden, and took 2 days of shed hunting. I'm easily distracted by anything elk.
Yeah, no, I am too. I don't know. I think if it came down to it, if I could only hunt one thing, it'd probably be. I say it would be elk because I enjoy hunting them more than anything else, I think, but if I look at it from an opportunity standpoint, I'm probably going to pick deer because there's more opportunity to hunt deer
for sure
than there is elk and longer seasons and so on and so forth. But yep. Anyway, I digress. So I'm going to hit you with this. This is a very common, especially here in Arizona. I hear this a lot. I'm not sure if it's quite as big of a deal in Idaho or in the more northern states or where the weather isn't quite as terribly hot. But sometimes here in our archery season usually opens around the September 14th, 11th sometimes. And depending on the unit and the elevation you're hunting, it could be freaking hot, like in the 90s, you know? And I feel like every third year, the full moon hits. I gotta look at my notes, but it's like every third year the full moon hits at the same time the opener is here. And seemingly, now I've come up with some of my own practices to overcome this, but seemingly when it's a full moon and it's hot, it makes for extremely tough hunting here. And I've noticed it in other places too, because I remember being in Colorado a number of years back and having the same type of scenario going on. Anyway, so the question is, it's early season, it's hot, the moon is full, you're not really hearing bugles during the day, you are hearing them at nighttime, what are you doing?
Yeah, and that's, like you mentioned, that's a really common scenario for an archery hunter, especially, which, you know, primarily those bugle rut seasons are more directed towards archery. And fortunately, I've had opportunity. Well, I say fortunately. Fortunately, I can answer it because I've had opportunities to hunt in those situations in a lot of different places. But unfortunately, it is tough. And, you know, I hunted Arizona the year that I hunted down there the last time. And that was exactly it. We had a full moon. It was hot. You know, it was approaching 90 degrees in the afternoon. It was a year that the seasons were a little earlier. So we, you know, the rut down there is different than in a lot of the mountain states in that they really don't turn on. You know, it's not, there is a gradual switch that comes on where you'll start getting some rut action. But it's really like a switch comes on overnight and all the bulls just turn on and the rut happens. Where in, you know, like Idaho or Montana or Wyoming, you'll have bulls bugling like it's the peak of the rut on August 30th some years. And so that early season in the desert states I've found is a lot different than the early season in the mountain states. And the way you deal with it is different. You know, you have to approach it a little differently. Because I always say in Idaho, Wyoming, Montana, I don't care what day it is. If it's August 30th through September 30th, there is a bull that's fired up somewhere and you just have to find him. And, you know, obviously there's more of them as you get towards the peak of the rut, but that early season in the mountain states, I can always find a bull that's fired up. You know, last year, Donnie shot that big 6-point mature herd bull on opening day here in Idaho, August 30th, and he bugled all day long. You know, we had 3 encounters with him in the morning. We sat on him during the heat of the afternoon and then got right back on him in the evening. And he came in to our calls. You go to a place like New Mexico or Arizona and on August 30th, you're not going to have those opportunities very frequently, you know, in my experience.
Right.
So then you've got the early season. You add heat, which in the desert states, the heat is more intense than in the mountain states during that time of year. Mm-hmm. And then you throw in a full moon, which, you know, I've found is just, again, much more magnified. The effects of it's much more magnified in the desert states than the mountain states. So, you know, I could give you all sorts of examples. The hunt in Arizona, hunt I did with Randy Newberg in New Mexico. It wasn't early season. It was later in the year, but it was still super hot and full moon, and we really struggled to get much bugling action.
Yeah.
But probably the one that stands out the most to me was in Utah when I drew a limited entry permit in Utah. Gosh, what's it been? 7-8 years ago. It was early. You know, Utah has an early season that opens probably the earliest of any elk season, except for maybe Nevada.
Yeah, it's really early.
Yeah, like August 16th it opened, and that year I think it closed on the 12th was the last day of the archery hunt. So we were hunting early. It was hot, and we had the full moon. So all of those factors you mentioned. And it was a good unit. You know, it took me 10 years to draw it, which 7 or 8 years ago in Utah, 10 points for an archery hunt would get you a pretty good hunt. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of anticipation. Got down there the first night, stepped out of the truck, literally from the truck, and a bull bugled. We moved in about 400 yards, ended up calling the bull into 20 yards and I passed it up and it was like a 320 inch bull. Mm-hmm. And again, you know, I'm going to shoot a mature 6 point pretty much first day anywhere I hunt for the most part, but with a 10 point limited entry hunt,
you want to be picky. I guess. Yeah,
the was first night. Yeah, it was a beautiful bull, but I'd done my research and knew what the potential was. And part of that research was go hunt this area. The bulls show up there every year on September 5th. It's like clockwork. They show up to rut. The cows come in there. That's where they rut. Just be there and the bulls will show up. So we got stuck in a rut, and not the good kind of rut, not the old rut. And it was hot. It was full moon. It was all those things. And, you know, in the back of my mind, I'm thinking, okay, it's hot. We've got a full moon. It's early season. We just have to wait. Things are going to change. Things are going to happen and it's going to get better. And I think we hunted 8 days. And on the evening of day six, I finally realized it's not going to happen. This is, you know, we've wasted our time. We've been stuck here in the same area, doing the same thing, getting the same results. And we need to branch out. We need to go see if they're doing something different in a different area. Mm-hmm. And we did. We went 15 miles away. And the bulls were screaming there. And just because of the temperatures, the drought that year, the elk didn't come into their normal rutting area. They went to a different area where there was water. And, you know, fortunately, it was good enough hunting that I was able to shoot a bull that next day, which was the second to the last day of the hunt. But we wasted a lot of time not finding elk. And so I think the strategy that I've adopted since then is, and it applies to a lot of different situations, but if you're not getting into elk, number one, go somewhere else. Find right. somewhere else. You know, don't get stuck in that area that, you know, I've scouted elk here. There's been elk here. I'm going to stay here and just wait it out, because the sad reality is we don't often have time to wait it out. So we've got to go and make opportunities or look for opportunities. So number one is don't get stuck in the rut. Go and find the elk that are talking, especially in the mountain states. That's super important in the mountain states, because there is going to be an elk somewhere talking. Yeah, those factors make it difficult, but they don't make it impossible. Mm-hmm. When we're talking about Arizona, New Mexico, Nevada, Utah, some of those desert states, sometimes going and finding the elk isn't quite as easy. And sometimes, you know, it's a matter of you've got to change up your tactics a little bit. So if you're hearing the bugles at night, but not during the day, mm-hmm. that full moon, you know, if we're talking mountain states, middle of the day is a great time to hunt, even in the heat. Those elk will still bugle sometimes from their bed. They'll get a little bit more active in the middle of the day because the full moon gets them going to bed earlier, gets them coming out in the evening later. But that middle of the day can be really productive. Those bulls are getting a little bit restless. And so I definitely don't count the middle of the day. And we're going to save the middle of the day discussion in detail for another question later on here. But in the desert states specifically, water is going to be your friend. And, right. you know, if you're wanting to bugle elk during the archery hunt and you've got a full moon and the heat and everything, sometimes you've got to just change up your strategies. And that's what Randy and I had to do in New Mexico 3 or 4 years ago. It was hot. There was a full moon. The elk just weren't bugling. They just weren't intensely rutting like they should be. Right. And we had to go and spot and stalk. You know, so we went out on the flatlands where we could glass. We found a bull. He bedded and we stalked in. And again, second to the last day of the hunt, I shot the bull, but I had to change the strategies to do that. And whether that's becoming more mobile and moving, whether it's changing the tactics to spot and stalk or sitting water, you've got to be flexible. And I think that's the biggest thing is don't lock yourself into one tactic. Don't lock yourself into one area. Be flexible in those and mix it up if you need to. And the other thing is a full moon, the effects of the full moon isn't going to last longer than a week typically. So, you know, if you have 2 weeks to hunt, plan around that first off, or if it's a 2 week season, plan around that full moon. Right. If you're hunting during that full moon, be prepared to adjust your tactics to be able to counter the effects of the full moon.
Yeah, no, I agree with you totally. What's that saying? The definition of insanity is doing the same thing over and over again and expecting a different result.
Yep.
Yeah. So no, I agree with you. I personally, speaking of your Utah hunt, when I am putting in for those upper echelon, you know, higher point value hunts, I always avoid, I'll just put in for a bonus point that year. I won't even put in for, if I know that the full moon is going to hit on, I've been following the moon for a long time. And it's primarily, it started with my whitetail hunting, but I noticed a lot of it translates in the earlier seasons. When it comes to like late season, like here in Arizona, like January mule deer rut or something like that, the full moon doesn't do much. It does. There's a little change, but it definitely on those when you're adding heat at you know, hot weather and dry weather with the moon, it makes a big deal because they can see really well. So hell, let's just rut at nighttime. Let's just, you know, expend our energy when it's cooler. And, you know, I mean, they rut quite a bit at nighttime anyway, but it's that much more. So during the day, they're like, all right, I spent my wad last night, you know, running around all night long, and I'm just going to lay down one and try to keep cool and eat this, this tree. And, you know,
yep, but absolutely. No, and they're just, yeah, I mean, their activity definitely is affected by the moon, you know, as far as when they get up and go to feed, when they go to bed down. Right. And that's the thing, like in Arizona, in Idaho, if I'm on a bull and he's bugling in the morning, his bugles are going to taper off into the morning and through the middle of the day, but he's still going to be vocal. And if I get in close, I can get him fired up. And, you know, it doesn't matter if it's 1 o'clock, 3 o'clock, 11 o'clock. If I get in close to that bull, I can get him fired up. When I hunted Arizona, you know, I've hunted it three times now. It's like a light switch goes off. Like there's 10 bulls screaming as they're going up there. You know, they're bugling back and forth. There's just all sorts of vocalization going on. Mm-hmm. And then it's all of a sudden like a light switch goes off and everything just goes quiet. And I'll sit there and bugle four or five times and not get an answer, knowing there's still 10 bulls that can hear me.
Right.
And every once in a while, you know, one will fire off a weak little bedded bugle. And if you get in close, you know, he might whine at you, but to get him fired up in the middle of the day, it's tough. Even during, you know, peak of the rut sometimes, and you throw that moon phase in there and that light switch, I think, just shuts off earlier in the day and doesn't turn on until later in the night. So your window of hunting opportunity decreases with that moon. So yeah, I'm like you. I look at what the moon phase is doing. You know, if we have a full moon on September 10th, and the peak of Utah's season falls in that time frame, I buy a bonus point, knowing that now I'm going to apply for Arizona this year and put in for that hunt because the season opens on the 14th and closes on the 29th or whatever.
Right.
And I definitely strategize those premier hunts around moon phase, what I think the weather might be doing, the years that the season aligns best with the you know, fall equinox and the peak of the rut. And there's a pretty complex algorithm that goes into figure out what hunts are going on and when.
Yeah, no, I know you got to be a freaking PhD in that stuff.
Statistics and analytics.
Yeah, exactly. So you did mention something that I didn't want to interrupt you. And I just remembered you were talking about how like the desert states seemingly have like an on and off switch for the rut itself. And I remember this from a bunch of research I did when I was getting my master's degree. And I think a lot of that has to do with the states that have general elk tags like Idaho, you know, Oregon, Washington, Colorado, and they have more of what's called like a trickle rut. It's not as concentrated versus the states that are really well managed. They have a shorter window of the rut, but it's very concentrated. And it's like from, it starts on this date and it ends on this date, like almost, you know, there's exceptions to every rule.
Totally.
You know, I've been out scouting in August and watched bulls beating up trees and bugling whatever, you know, mid August. But for the most part, I agree with you. Like I noticed that like here in Arizona, when it turns on, it's on. And it's kind of a, it kind of, I don't want to say by unit, but it's almost by like section. Like this area will be really hot. And then 10 miles over 3 days later, this will be really hot. And like, but it's still within this, you know, two or three, that's more like a month, but let's call it 3 weeks period where it's like, boom, everything came on. 2 days later, nothing was talking, but now everything's talking. And I think a lot of that has to do with the management of the herd. Because I remember this too with like, I'm going to equate this to whitetail because there's a lot more research about whitetail than anything. Like on a really well-managed ranch in Texas, let's say, when you have tighter bucks to doe ratios, the rut is more intense and it's shorter, and those does are having babies also closer together because they all got bred closer together, and it just keeps getting closer and closer, and that's how that window kind of like tightens up. And I think when you go to a state like Idaho where you know, they give away a crap ton of tags, there's a lot of hunters, there's a lot of, you know, and the season is pretty liberal and there's more seasons, it affects that concentration. And I think also because they're more spread out throughout the state versus Arizona, where, you know, we have elk in, not really pockets, but let's, you know, elk in a real generalized area versus the whole state. Like, I mean, pretty much the whole state of Idaho has elk in it, right?
I mean, yeah, no, and that's, you know, I think there's, I would agree 100% with you, you know, demographics of the elk, the bull to cow ratios, all of that, the population density, you know, you get some of the mountain states and yeah, there's a lot of elk in Colorado and Oregon and Idaho compared to, you know, Utah, Arizona, Nevada, but the elk that are in Arizona, Nevada, Utah are able to concentrate more during the rut. The rut's not as disrupted by, you know, the general hunting pressure that goes on, the demographics as far as the age class of the bulls that are doing the breeding, the bull to cow ratios, those sort of things are different. I think all of those things contribute to that effect. You know, if you look at the bell curve of when the peak rut hits, it's tighter in some of those more managed states, more controlled states than it is in some of the states that are managed more for opportunity.
Agreed. All right, moving on. Let's see. So another scenario, and this gets asked of me a lot, and be perfectly honest with you, I got hit with this a lot, and I'm sure everybody does in Oregon. It's rainy. It's windy. Your calls aren't really carrying a long ways because of the weather, and you haven't heard a bugle all day long for a couple days maybe. I don't know. What is it? You know there's elk in the area because you see sign, but you haven't heard any bugles. You haven't really seen an elk. What are you doing?
Go back to camp and wait for the rain to stop.
I know.
No, and it's
– I say rainy. Let's like drizzle rain, you know, not like downpour. But
yeah. No, and it's – you know, there's a lot of I'm a big proponent of staying out and hunting all day, and, you know, hunting in any condition, you have to be out there in order to have an opportunity. And if you're back at camp, you might miss out on your opportunity. You might miss out on, you know, you might have been in the right place at the right time that day. And when you go back to camp, you're not there and you can't kill an elk from camp. But with that said, a lot of the places we hunt, you know, Idaho, Wyoming, you know, just different places, typically those storms that come through don't last more than a day or two, you know, at least the heavy rain part or the windy part, they come through and they blow over and things get better. And so depending on where I'm hunting in those conditions, I might go back to camp. I might spend that day, you know, in doing laundry or run into town and recharge, you know, with the cheeseburger and a milkshake or something, rather than staying out there and spending energy in the rain, spending energy in conditions that are going to wear me out or make it so it's just not as much fun or as comfortable to be out there. So it does it definitely depends on, you know, if the storm's going to pass, what I do. But with that being said, elk act differently when it's rainy and windy than they do when it's clear and cold and crisp. And you have to adjust your hunting style to that. If it's miserable rain and wind and the wind's coming from a certain direction, I think our first inclination is to find a big tree that breaks the wind and sit under it, you know, kind of hunker down and get out of that rain. Elk are probably going to act similar. And so if you are wanting to hunt them, you've got to know where they're going. You've got to be able to determine where they're hunkered down at, and then you've got to get in close with them. And, you know, if you aren't hearing a bugle, there's a lot that goes into that. First off, you can't hear very well in the wind. Second off, the elk are probably hunkered down somewhere thick where, you know, bugles aren't going to carry as well. So you've got to get into those areas and hunt the elk in those areas where they are. They aren't going to be roaming as much. They aren't going to get up and travel 3 miles from their bedding area to feed in a heavy rainstorm. They're probably going to feed close by to their bedding areas and hunker down there. So just understanding what the elk are doing during those times is important. And then changing up your strategy so you aren't necessarily getting on a ridge and covering a lot of country on a ridge, broadcasting a bugle into big country. Elk can't hear that now. So now you've got to get in and focus in tight into where the elk are and spend your time in those tight quarters with the elk.
Yeah. Oh, that makes sense. Makes sense.
And you mentioned Oregon, you know, I know you hunted Roosevelt there and I did too. And it's, I mean, that's pretty much the story of every day. It might not be raining, but there's moisture every day, and that moisture, even the condensation from fog dripping out of the trees, makes more noise than most rain that I've been around during hunting.
Right.
There's always wind rustling something. There's always noise that you're just like, I can't hear if something's, if that was a branch that just broke or, you know, what that was. And then, you know, your bugles aren't carrying a long ways. And so you do have to kind of micro hunt the area, and you've got to kind of dial in where the elk are and hunt that smaller area, focused more on trying to get that bull to respond that you know is in that micro area, not in a larger drainage.
Right. No, that makes good sense. You know, just trying to see how I want to word this, but you know what? I'm going to leave it alone. I like your answer. I like your answer.
No. And I give, you know, an example. We hunted Wyoming several years ago. And I say, you know, go back to camp and wait it out. This year in Wyoming that we hunted there several years ago, we couldn't do that. It rained and snowed and was windy every day of an 8-day hunt. It just didn't break. It was just one of those miserable last weeks of September, which last week of September is usually just epic as far as hearing bugles and being on elk and just, you know, you run yourself ragged just going from bugle to bugle. And the elk were vocal that year, but we could not get a bull to come into our bugles. It was just the weirdest thing, you know, that we were trying our normal tactics and they weren't working. And what did work for us was we just would find a bull that was following cows. He wasn't as vocal because of the wind and the rain, but he was still vocal. Mm-hmm. But we just had to change our tactic to, we can't set up and call this bull in. We've got to just follow him, stay on the herd, and be in close so that when he does make a mistake, when he turns to find a cow, when he turns to leave the cow to go down and rake a tree, he's doing all the normal things, but he just wouldn't come into the bugles. We just started doing that, basically just shadowing the herd, getting on them, whether we'd hear him bugle at first light and then, you know, get in there and follow him, knowing that our bugles were just chasing him away or that, you know, we couldn't broadcast a bugle and locate elk with it. And we ended up, you know, everybody had opportunities in the last 2 or 3 days of the hunt just by changing up those tactics. And so we were forced to hunt in those conditions. We had to get into the pockets where the elk were. We had to hunt them during the middle of the day in their bedding areas, just slipping along, almost still hunting like a rifle hunter, listening for those close bugles, and then doing our best as badly as we wanted to not to respond to the elk, knowing that they just, because of the wind being swirly, because of the rain, they just weren't comfortable engaging in those bugle matches like they normally are.
No, it makes perfect sense. I was going to add, so I'm going to add, because you kind of said changing up your tactics. I didn't want it to sound like the first answer, but and I guess changing up your tactics and being, you know, adaptive is always the best, you know, best answer for anything. But I found in inclement weather, now, given that you're hunting an area you can do this in, works really well for Utah, works really well for Arizona, New Mexico. I like to switch to glassing. I do. I think that I found I'd rather put myself in a spot where, one, I'm not expending a crap ton of energy hiking around, looking for bugle, you know, listening for bugles, and covering a lot of ground. That I like to cover ground with my eyes. I'll switch areas to where I, you know, like ridge lines and stuff that I could glass. And I found that in the wind, and this goes for pretty much any species out there, that if I glass into the wind, more than likely I'm going to find animals because they're either feeding, bedding, whatever, on the, you know, leeward side of the wind, basically.
Yeah, they want out of the wind just as badly as we do.
Exactly. So, and that's about the only thing, because now, going back to Oregon, you can't really do that there.
Yeah.
I mean, you can a little bit. We actually glassed up this last time we were there, Anthony and I glassed up with, who was with us that day? I think Shannon was with us. Yeah, Shannon was with us. We glass up a big herd. And I could see them. We were bugling to them. They didn't even lift their heads up. But it was kind of rainy. It was windy that day and rainy. And, you know, hell, it was it was pretty much rainy and windy every single day. We had one. And Corey keeps telling me that Corey Ford keeps telling me that it's not like this all the time. It's not like this all the time. You usually get good days. Like every time I come, man, it's freaking raining and it's windy. Like I've never, ever, I think I've spent now, I guess not that many days, 20 days hunting in Oregon and another 7 in Washington. And I want to say I've had 4 days where there was no rain.
Yeah, it's. I wouldn't say our odds were that bad. We had some good days, you know, and we had rain days. But then, like I said, that condensation, it turns into a rain day. Even when it's foggy, and then the fog burns off, there's still water dripping out of the trees for 3 hours. It's as loud as a downpour. So yeah, we've been pretty fortunate with weather over there for our timing.
Yeah, no, I seem to bring the bad weather. I don't know how I bring it because I'm coming from Arizona. I'm usually coming from hot and dry, but I'm bringing the bad weather with me somehow.
No, that's, you know, one point you made there. We noticed that to a point that it became a strategy when it's raining hard over in Oregon where it's real thick. And I think that would probably be applied, you know, to northern Idaho, northern Washington, northwest Montana, where it's just real thick and brushy. The elk don't like to sit in that rain where it's loud either. They don't like the rain dripping down. They don't like the noise. It kind of dulls their senses and their ability to stay alive. And we found that those Roosevelt elk would move out into clear cuts in downpours. And we'd find them feeding middle of the day out in a clear cut.
Yeah, no, I noticed that as well. I think it's because all that noise makes them nervous because they can't. It's deadening their senses, you know. Yeah. Like, and when you're down in something versus on a more open face, I think the wind is more predictable. That's my theories anyway. But
yeah. No, they've got 3 senses to keep them alive. You know, first is their sense of smell always. And in a swirling wind, you know, it makes it harder for them to realize or recognize where the danger is coming from. You know, back up to that is their ability to see and their ability to smell. And you get in that thick brush and they can't see. And so if they can't smell, or sorry, hear, if they can't smell because of the wind and they can't see because of the brush and they can't hear because the rain is making all sorts of noise, they go out into the open and use the only sense they really have, which is their sense of sight. Right. And like you said, the wind might be a little bit more stable out there where they can at least rely on it and see in the other direction. And yeah, that was something that we, you know, I noticed it and thought, huh, that's weird. Why are the elk out in the middle of the clear cut at noon?
Yep.
And then, you know, it started raining another day and I said, you know, let's go check the clear cut. And sure enough, the elk are coming out of the timber into the clear cut at noon in a downpour. And that became a strategy that if it's raining, we've got to hunt the open country today.
Yep. Yep. Well, you just mentioned midday. Let's talk about this. I got a midday scenario for you. It's midday. You haven't been on bulls all morning and I don't know, seemingly good time of year, weather's fine, but you haven't been on bulls all morning. It's midday. What are you doing to change up and try to create some opportunity for yourself?
No, I love that question for a lot of reasons. Number one, midday is probably one of my favorite times to hunt. Number two, you used the word create some opportunity or the phrase create some opportunity. And that's, I think, a big part of elk hunting success is so many people go out and they hope to find opportunity or they wait for opportunity to come to them. And if you can get in the mindset of creating opportunity, I think it changes your ability to find success drastically. And, you know, I think this is a perfect question to answer to illustrate that, but it's also my favorite question to answer because I love midday hunting so much. I think the average hunter goes out at daylight or before daylight. They hunt for 2 or 3 hours. The main, you know, if we're hunting the rut, the main part of bugling tapers off and they head back to camp. Mm-hmm. And they go back to camp and they make a nice lunch. They take a nap. They, you know, run into town to make a phone call. They do all these things that are not going to contribute to their success. And so I guess number one, stay on the mountain. I hunt all day long with very few exceptions. Do I come off the mountain? And if I do, it's usually to relocate and I'm going back into the other area midday. But I love all day hunting and I'll get into some details of why I love that. But if it's midday, you haven't been on bulls all morning, the hunt's not over. You can keep going and find those. And again, it goes back to the first question we talked about. The mountain states are going to be a little bit different than the desert states. Mm-hmm. But even in the desert states, I'm still going to be out there, whether I'm, you know, just scouting, looking for sign, glassing, whatever I'm doing, I'm out in the field all day. I'm not going back to camp. If we're talking about mountain states and rut hunting, I'm covering country. I'm mobile. I'm on a ridge. I'm broadcasting bugles, and I'm doing that all day long. And the reason why I like midday hunting so much is in the mornings, elk are typically traveling from their feeding and watering areas and going to their bedding areas. And that might be a short 400-yard travel for them. It might be a 4 or 5 mile travel for them. Mm-hmm. But those bulls are following the cows. And even if you're getting into a lot of bugling action, it's going to be more difficult to get that bull to turn and come into your setup. You know, you're behind him going up the mountain. You're following him up the mountain. He's following the cows to their bedding area. He's going to be less likely to turn around and come back to you, knowing that his cows don't really care about what's going on back there. His cows are like, you know, guys are back there being guys. We're going to our bedding area. You do what you want to do. But the cows aren't going to stop and wait. They're going to keep going, and that just increases the chance of another bull coming in and taking those cows. And so that bull is just going to be less likely to turn and come in. Once they get to their bedding area, the cows aren't moving. They're locked down. They're comfortable. They're in the place where they feel secure. The cows aren't moving. You let that bull settle down for half an hour in his bedding area and then slip into the bedding area, he's going to be way more likely to come in because the cows aren't moving. He's territorial and protective of his area, and another bull coming into his area, he's going to want to get rid of him. So I think the likelihood of being able to call that bull into a setup and have a successful setup is way higher if you can get into that static environment in their bedding area, more so than in the dynamic area where they're moving up the mountain and on the move. So my mm-hmm. strategy for that is, you know, follow the bull up the mountain, keep vocal contact with him. Don't try to call him in necessarily, but follow him up to their bedding area, keeping in mind that they're moving with the thermals. Their timing of when they move is strategic about what the thermals are doing to protect them. So thermals are coming down the mountain, they're moving up the mountain to their bedding area. And when they get to their bedding area, they mill around for a little bit. But when they hunker down and things go quiet, it's usually about the same time that the thermals change and start coming up the mountain. So if you're underneath them, following them up the mountain, you have great thermals, everything's good. And then you hunker down there and wait for them to settle down. They're probably going to smell you when that thermal changes. So I like to get over adjacent to them. So I'm kind of lateral to them, side hill from them. So
that when same level.
Do change, yeah, same level. Yeah. So when the thermals do change, they still don't smell me. And then I can move in from a side hill level and work the calls. But basically, that's what I do. I follow them up the mountain. If I'm not having luck getting them to turn and come in, I'm going to get on an adjacent ridge. I'm going to move up. I'm going to keep listening to them. And you can kind of predict where they're going to bed. You know, they're usually going to head to a north face where it's going to be cooler throughout the day, probably a little bench or something. So you can't necessarily say, I'm going to go and sit on that bench and know they're going to show up there. But I can be back across and I don't have to hike hard. I don't have to try to keep up with the elk. I just listen to where they're going and you can kind of tell, man, he's bugled three or four times right there on that bench. I bet that's where they're going to settle down. So then I can slide up and get on the same elevation and plan my approach and my setup. Mm-hmm. But from there, you know, I move in, I give him a cow call once I get close and I'm in a good location where I think he's going to feel comfortable coming in and get a response out of him. And I think this is where it's probably different in the mountain states than the desert states. A lot of times you won't get a response in a desert state middle of the day. Even if you're 120 yards away, that bull might just lay there and not give you a response. Mm-hmm. I think a lot of bulls will, but some of them won't. A place like Idaho, I'm pretty confident that I'm going to be able to get a response out of a bull just about anywhere here in the mountains if I'm within 120 yards of him middle of the day and it's anytime between September 1st and September 30th. So that's my strategy, getting close, get a response, and then challenge him, make him think another bull's getting really close to his cows in their bedding area, and he's got to come in and run you off. And that's my midday strategy. And I wouldn't say that 50% of the elk that I've shot have been, you know, middle of the day, but I would say it's pretty close to that, that they've been between 11 o'clock and 3 o'clock in the afternoon.
Yeah, no, it's not too far off from, I think what I would do. I have, so here in a desert state, cause I've done most of my elk hunting here in Arizona, but if I'm on a herd in the morning and I'm following them to their bed, everything you said pretty much applies. You know, get on the same level as them and basically try to create something once they've settled down and you know they're staying put. If I'm not on one, I switch tactics completely. I don't go and try to call. I go and sit water. We have the clients go sit water. Midday, I find a lot of times they'll get up and, you know, they'll come up out of their bed and they'll go down the water midday to go drink. And, you know, it doesn't always happen. It's not, if you're running cameras and stuff like that, and you have a good idea and you have, you know, herds patterned doing that, then definitely do that. I try to, if I am on them and they're not responding to me, I think if I'm on a herd in the morning and I you know, follow them to their bed, what I do is I just get in real tight and then just wait them out till they get back up again, you know, and start feeding, hopefully feeding towards me or start, you know, vocalizing again. I think I'm a little bit, I'm not as aggressive, but yeah, that's pretty much what I do.
Yeah, no, and that's, you know, we did that exact same thing last year as far as waiting them out. That bull Donnie shot opening day, we didn't get on it until probably 9:30 or 10 in the morning, and it was screaming its head off on August 30th, had cows, could tell it was a mature bull, and just our setups, it came in the first time and circled about 100 yards below us, just wasn't comfortable coming to us. And then it turned, went back, we got in and bumped a satellite bull and, you know, in trying to settle it down, let out some calls. The herd bulls came screaming off the hillside and kind of caught us in the bottom of a draw, and we just didn't have another good setup, even though it was only 60 yards. And we followed them back around and could tell, okay, the cows are moving up the ridge now. And the area they were going to bed down was kind of a big open face in a bowl with just a tiny little north face ridge on the back of it that I figured they were going to bed in, and really no way to approach it without being seen or being heard or them smelling us. Mm-hmm. And so we just hunkered back and we sat there for 5 or 6 hours, you know, from about noon until 5:30. And then said, okay, we've got to go and find them now. The thermals are going to start changing. We've got to make sure we're below them. So we climbed around the mountain, started bugling, no answer, no answer, no answer, and thought, well, maybe they went over the top of the ridge, circled all the way around this mountain and didn't get an answer, and kind of said, you know what? I bet they dropped down to bed. They dropped down where it was cooler in that little draw. And so we slipped around the mountain, got on the same level and bugled, and sure enough, he answered right down in that draw. And we slipped in and shot him, but had we tried to push it during the middle of the day there, just it wasn't the right situation. And so you do have to kind of judge each one differently and say, okay, is he in a position in his bedding area where I have a play? And if he's not, you've got to just wait him out.
Yeah, no, good advice. Good advice. Well, I think I'm going to cut it right there, and we'll have you come back on and we'll throw you out a couple more scenarios and see what you got to say about those. I think you'll like these next couple that I got for you.
I was going to say, I've already read through them and I was super excited to answer them. So yeah, we definitely have to finish this, cause it's the one where you have bulls screaming all over, you know, the dream hunt, and then the classic bull that bugles and keeps moving off, which I think is probably the most frustrating, but also the most common challenge is that bull that bugles and runs. So yeah, super excited for a future episode to tackle those ones.
Well, awesome. I want to thank you for coming on and spending some time with us, and we'll get you back on here to get that part two of this, you know, what would Corey do, and hopefully I don't know if I get any more come up, I'll send them your way.
Absolutely. No, I appreciate you having me on, and it's always can talk elk anytime, but we're starting to get into that time of the year where it's real yep. Right now, you know, we're starting to really prepare and starting to really get excited and lock in our plans for the fall. So always a pleasure coming on and chatting with you about elk.
Yeah. Awesome. My cousin Anthony drew a tag here. So he's already in the mode. He's been going practicing shooting every day. He's been up scouting already, like, you know, learning roads and whatever. But so I haven't drawn crap yet, but we'll see. We'll see how the rest of the year. Well, elk draws are done, but oh no, are they not?
No, we've
got. Oh no, that's right. Because it's done for me because I withdrew my application.
Yeah, Wyoming comes out later this month. Oregon isn't until results in June. Idaho results aren't until July. So there's still a handful of them out there.
Well, cool. Thank you again. And we'll definitely talk to you soon.
Sounds great. Thanks, John.
Thank you.